So come to order, it's 3:22 on...
Is that earthquake?
April 14th. Representative Wilson is with us, Representative Holmes, Representative Newman, Representative Book, and myself, Chair Olson. We have a quorum. Give BlackBerry on, please turn it on. I don't know if we have time for donuts, but...
Turn it on.
We could convene just for that, Mr. Chairman.
First item on the calendar today is Senate Bill 234, extending the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board sunset. And with us is Josh Appleby, not a stranger to this room. Staff to Senator Kevin Meyer. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's always a pleasure to come back before House Labor and Commerce. Old stomping grounds. Unlike the previous board extensions, Mr. Chairman, this is a unique animal. Senate Bill 234 extends the sunset for the ABC board 1 year. The audit showed that this board is a work in progress. There's been three audits in the last 7 years, and audit recommendations from prior audits carry forward, and it's a board that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee felt needed some additional attention, some additional tender loving care. And so we're proposing a 1 year extension so that we may take the interim, Mr. Chairman, to look at what's been going on with the board and look at the successes of the current executive director and make sure they're going on the right, in the right direction. And we'll be coming back before the legislature next year with a more comprehensive extension bill. The CS that was put forth in the Finance Committee in the Senate added three additional provisions to the sunset, Mr. Chairman. The first is removing the executive director's tie-breaking vote. It was addressed in the audit as something that needed to be done and also brought to the attention by the executive director. The executive director isn't brought by the governor, isn't approved by the legislature. The executive director position is a hired position, and putting them in a position to make tie-breaking votes on policy is kind of unusual. Mr. Chairman, the second change has to do with the statewide alcohol database, and Representative Herron was very helpful in putting this provision together to give the subject of the database access to what sort of information is being collected about him, her, or the business. The third addition in Senate Finance, Mr. Chairman, is a repealer that removes the use of underage persons in compliance checks. As usual, we have Pat Davidson from Legislative Audit to address any questions the committee might have in regards to the audit itself. The chair of Legislative Budget and Audit, my boss, Senator Kevin Meyer, would like to assure the committee that over the interim, the hearings that we're going to have both with the department, with the board, and with the license holders and industry, we should be able to put together a very comprehensive extension bill next year, one that cleans up any parts of the statute that might have issues and bring forth another audit that shows all the good work the executive director has done over the last year since this audit was completed. And we'll bring that back before the legislature next January.
Representative Lynn. I'd like to acknowledge Representative Lynn has joined us.
And after joining you, I've got to. Would you expand, please, on the using underage persons for compliance check? What exactly happened on that and why?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lynn, the Senate Finance Committee inserted the two repealers because it was told that using underage people to purchase alcohol is not proper.
Is not what?
Not proper, and shouldn't be done. And that addition was added to the bill, passed out of committee, and then passed the Senate.
That just seems odd to me because, it's not proper for cops to lie during an investigation either, but they do that so they can do their duty. How are you going to check compliance on selling to underage people and catch somebody at it unless you have an underage person do that? Of course, it's not, they're not taking it home and having a party. It just doesn't make investigation sense to me. Or are catching people, it seems to me.
Actually, Representative Lynn, there is a SES that addresses that particular issue, yeah. We've been joined by Speaker Chenault at a full committee. Any further questions, then we'll adopt the CS and we can address them both at the same time. But I entertain a motion to adopt the CS for discussion purposes.
For discussion, because I don't know if I want the CS. Mr. Chair, I'd like to adopt CS for Senate Bill 234, Finance, version /E, ECHO, for committee discussion.
And I'll object to for purposes of discussion.
I thought we had the wrong version.
Oh, wrong version.
Excuse me, I meant all is in Peter.
Version P for purposes of discussion.
I have version P.
Would you like to do the CS, or would you like Conrad?
Where's Conrad? Hey, Conrad, I don't have version P.
Thanks. I would say House Tricks, but then you might think well, I might, something else.
I might take that the wrong way. Tricks are for kids.
That's not necessarily for kids.
I wanted to be reading off the same sheet of music.
Oh, yeah. Same sheet of music?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the record. Conrad Jackson, staff to the chair, Representative Olson. The CS version /P won't take long to understand. It deletes Section 4 of the initial bill. It will allow the underage... the use of underage folks for investigations into underage selling of alcohol. And that's the extent of the changes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
Where was the change at? I'm sorry.
If you turn to the second page of the bill, the original bill line, which is /E, mm-hmm. Look at line 25, page 2. Original Section 4 disappears.
Thank you.
Certainly.
It's my understanding that portion came out of an incident up in the interior where a underage person was in an establishment. She was asked for identification. She produced it. The server felt that it was a phony driver's license, kept it, and then the state trooper or whoever she was working with came in and allegedly made a scene getting the license back. And so it was related to one incident, which I have been advised by the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board has been rectified. I don't believe we'll be seeing it again, so it has been fixed on a different level.
Thank you.
But we'll have Shirley Gifford on board later in a few minutes on that. Representative Newman had a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. This question with the 21 age, and this one I maybe understand a little bit better. When you have a business that serves alcohol, does this mean, I don't want this to mean, or I guess what I'm, because it just really doesn't tell you in the bill, if they serve alcohol, does that mean that nobody under 21 can be in the building or the premises?
Mr. Chairman, again for the record, Josh Appleby, staff to Senator Meyer. Representative Newman, I think that question might be better directed to the executive director of the ABC board as far as their processes and some of their laws.
Would Shirley Gifford online?
Yes, she's online.
Oh.
I don't know where the sheet went to.
Shirley Gifford, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Representative Olson.
Oh, thank goodness. Welcome back. Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and we have a couple of questions for you from Representative Newman.
This is Shirley Gifford. I'm director for the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Shirley, can you explain the clause here, or if it does or does not, how does it affect people who are younger than 21, where there may be alcohol served?
Through the chair, if I understand your question correctly, allowing underage persons into establishments is acceptable under certain circumstances, and that is if they are 16, 17, if they're with a parent. If they're with a parent, they can be in the establishment. So parents have rights above all other people. So in that respect, unless the underage person is has a health or safety hazardous issue, then they are allowed on the establishment. This particular subsection of 416049F and 416060F both relate to the authority that is given to peace officers, not just Alcoholic Beverage Control Board investigators, but peace officers across the state, because there are local agencies who conduct their own compliance checks. And so it allows them to employ underage persons to assist them in that duty. If we didn't have this kind of authority, then it would be illegal for the 21-year-olds to, under 21, to go into an establishment and attempt to purchase alcohol.
Follow up?
So, thank you, Ms. Chair. So, Shirley, if a business served beer or wine and a person was under 21, like in a pizza joint or something like that, if they served beer and wine and they were under 21, would they have to be with their parent?
We have restaurant eating place. We have restaurant designation permits, and under certain circumstances, if under 21-year-olds come in for eating purposes only, then they're allowed under those circumstances. But through the chair, Representative Newman, those establishments like the pizza places and other restaurant eating places, they do apply for the restaurant designation permit. They submit floor plans. They submit, you know, exactly what their business is and how they operate before we sign off on those.
Okay, that's, Mr. Chair, that's kind of was my question, you know, that those establishments, because we don't know that or we can't see it under, at least what I'm reading in the bill here.
What we have in front of us.
Yeah, we have in front of us that, you know, it wasn't going to affect them, because sometimes it's those unintended consequences that we deal with that hiccup on us. So is there any, how about if you're over 18 and under 21, does it affect anything?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, that particular section F states a person under 21 years of age does not violate this section if the person enters or remains on premises licensed under this title at the request of a peace officer, if the peace officer accompanies, supervises, or otherwise observes the person's entry or remaining on premises, and the purpose of the entry or remaining on premises is to assist in the enforcement of this section. So this particular section addresses only those under 21-year-olds who are assisting peace officers in doing the compliance checks. 416049 and 416060 goes into other quite a bit more detail about when under 21-year-olds can be on premises where alcohol is served.
Thank you.
That's good.
Oh, thanks, Shirley. Representative Book, did you have a question for Ms. Gifford?
Not on this line of questioning.
Well, I think anybody else?
I do better.
Representative Wynn?
I know they can go in where a minor can go in where the parent. I don't believe they can even go in with a grandparent. Is that correct? That left a grandparent that has guardianship, but just a regular grandparent.
Ms. Gifford?
Ms. Gifford?
Through the chair, Representative Book, the title does have some leeway for parents, guardians, or spouses that have attained the age of 21. We also have a form that a person could fill out where they allow that under 21-year-old person to be accompanied by someone else, such as a teacher. Sometimes teachers and guardians or chaperones like to take kids after a softball game or a football game, take them to a pizza place where they do serve alcohol, and they serve as that guardian. So there is some leeway in the law to allow for those kinds of events.
A grandparent?
Yes.
Okay.
For the chair.
Any further questions for Ms. Gifford at this time? Or Josh?
For Ms. Gifford.
Ms. Gifford?
I had a question on, you have 11 people, employees. Are they throughout Alaska in the different communities?
Through the chair, I believe this is Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, we have one investigator assigned in Fairbanks, one investigator assigned in Juneau, and the rest of the employees are here in Anchorage.
And follow up?
Yep.
And is it their responsibility for if a new establishment's going in to make sure the signage and all that is proper in the community before they get that license?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, yes. Before a license is issued, an inspection is in order and likely to be done. Sometimes if we don't have someone in the area, we'll rely on troopers or local police to give us a hand in doing those inspections.
Mr. Chair, I'm talking about like the signage they have to put out in front saying that they're thinking about having an alcohol permit. Do you actually go by and make sure that it's the place where it's supposed to be for the community?
Oh, through the chair, Representative Wilson, we pretty much count on local governing body to assist with that. Because we are such a small number of people in the agency, we do the statute. In fact, points out that local police, local governing bodies must help with enforcing these statutes and regulations, and that's when we refund or return the licensing fees to the local governing body to assist in making sure all of those ducks are in a row before they get their licenses. So we have a very good, close working relationship with local governing bodies across the state.
One more follow-up. Just a piece of advice. I come from the Fairbanks North Star Borough and off their assembly, and we have always assumed that you did it, and so did the mayor. So you might want to have a nice little chat so that everybody realizes who's responsible.
Representative Olson, if I could speak to that.
Yes, certainly.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we do have a very good working relationship with the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and I'm just wondering if maybe I'm not understanding your question correctly, where they have to post 3 weeks in advance of getting their license. They need to post either at City Hall or the post office and on the location. Is that what you're talking about?
Correct. We had one on Chena Hot Springs that there was supposed to be notice at the piece of, at the property in which they were going to have a pizzeria slash bar, and there was nothing posted. And when it became very contentious at a meeting, basically the borough blamed the APC board, and the APC board, I think, kind of said it was the borough. So I thought this was my opportunity to find out whose responsibility it was.
Okay. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I would be happy to look into a specific situations like that. This is, I'm not going to testify that things don't fall through the cracks, because they do.
No problem. Thank you.
Are you going to be online for a while, Shirley, in case we need you again?
I am here for the duration, Representative Olson, whatever.
Oh, thanks. Questions for Josh? With that, we'll expand out a bit. Pat Davidson. Thanks, Josh.
Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Pat Davidson, representing the Division of Legislative Audit. We conducted a sunset review of the ABC board, and we had our recommendation of a four-year extension. And basically, it was less than the eight-year because we saw that while there were improvements in some of the administrative deficiencies that we had been noticing over the last decade, they were not totally resolved yet. And therefore, we made a recommendation for a shorter time period. One thing that we did find is that the board hired a new executive director in January of 2009. And while that director had made most of those improvements, there were still improvements to be made. Some of the deficiencies included the board had not established a quantifiable and objective enforcement goal. What we saw when we looked at the statistics of compliance checks and inspections, you saw a dominance of activity in those areas where the investigators were located. That the geographic location shouldn't be your driver for enforcement. It should be a more well thought out plan for enforcement, and so that was one of our recommendations. And then they had a series of administrative deficiencies, poor record keeping, lack of reconciliations, weak licensing procedures. We found that the data entry staff entering information into the activity of ABSIN wasn't sufficiently trained, and so we saw errors creeping in there. Additionally, we also saw insufficient procedures to ensure the accuracy and completeness of the information recorded in the board's restricted alcohol purchasers statewide database.
Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, maybe this question is for you, but what do we have to do to make sure that we have Pat Davidson here all the time?
We just have to have sunset.
We never let her retire.
Representative Book.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your expertise once again. So your recommendation was for 4 years. This bill is for one. We're looking at an updated assessment to be presented January of 2011. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Book, after discussion with the chairman of the Budget and Audit Committee, what we will be preparing is an updated status of all the outstanding recommendations, and that would be available to the legislature at the beginning of next session.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Pat.
Certainly.
We also have in the audience Tony Newman from Health and Social Services, Division of Juvenile Justice, for questions, if we have any for Tony. Get off light. Is there anybody else in the room that would care to testify on the bill? We also have Kiana Active from the ABC online for questions. Adrian Active, United Way from Anchorage. Are those questions or statements?
How about testimony?
No, that's fine. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
I'm Adrian Active. I'm the community liaison with United Way of Anchorage. I'm actually working specifically on a substance abuse mental health services administration grant, and I'm a liaison for four partners up here. Would be United Way, South Central Foundation, Kookumet Tribal Council, and the municipality of Anchorage, and it's specifically addressed to reduce access, reduce demand, and increase resiliency of alcohol use among youth here in Anchorage. So part of our grant is to oversee subrecipients, which I do, and one of them is Volunteers of America, who has now implemented a environmental strategy, which is a grassroots advocacy group to reduce access, which is one of our three goals. Of alcohol for minors, specifically here in the Anchorage area, and also looking at reviewing local and institutional policies that affect alcohol use among minors. Throughout this process, we are now in our second year of this grant, and we are implementing part of the strategies is compliance checks and shoulder taps, because it shows that it's a practice that reduces demand and reduces access availability. So along that line, our subrecipient is beginning to enter a contract with the Alcohol Beverage Control Board, which will help to increase the number of compliance checks here because we're funding them, I believe, in the amount of $15,000 for another officer to help offset the costs of the outside the Anchorage area. So our monies will specifically go to the compliance checks and shoulder taps here in Anchorage. And we're also looking at a number of other strategies, but this is a very important strategy to our grant to be able to look at impacting the alcohol use of minors here in Anchorage.
Any questions for Ms. Active? Thanks again. Kiana, were you here for testimony or questions?
Testimony.
Please state your name and affiliation, and thank you for joining us.
I'm a volunteer at CMCA, and my name is Kiana Active.
Please continue.
I also work with Joe Hamilton on the compliance checks, and I think that you guys should keep this because kids can go to the restaurants, bars, and liquor stores and buy alcohol. I've gotten served a Corona at a restaurant, but they took it away after they looked at my ID three times, and to see that I'm only 18 and not 21. Also, I think it's important for kids and teenagers not to have alcohol in their system because it kills their brain and just makes them not all there when they are drinking, and it makes them a fool of themselves, and it just doesn't, it's not right for their body. They aren't ready to drink yet.
Well, thank you very much. Are there any questions for Kiana? Thanks again.
Thank you.
Anna Sapa, Advisory Board Alcohol and Drug Abuse. Are you with us?
I am. Thank you very much. My name is Anna Sapa, for the record. I serve as a beneficiary member on the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. And I'm also the executive director of the Alaska Addiction Professionals Association. And I just wanted to say that we're deeply concerned that discontinuing the compliance checks by of licensees, one of the best ways to ensure that sales of alcohol to minors is not being made, is directly contradicted by Alaska's plan to reduce and prevent underage drinking. And really, the compliance checks are one of the greatest tools that we have, and we would be deeply concerned if those compliance checks were removed. And that's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Anna? Annie Carpinetti, probably calling from across the street. Are you with us, Annie?
Yes, I'm here. I really don't have much testimony, but we support the CS, which deleted those two sections that would prohibit the board from doing compliance checks, because they have made a huge difference in how alcohol is not served to minors in our state, and we appreciate the committee substitute that you're currently considering.
I would certainly call that testimony, as would the rest of the committee. Thanks again, Annie. Ellen Ganley, Fairbanks, ABC Board, testifying or questions?
Testifying.
Oh, thank you. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Ellen Ganley, and I'm Vice Chair of the ABC Board. I'm a public member from Fairbanks. And the members of the ABC Board oppose the elimination of the compliance check program. Compliance checks, which are funded through federal grant monies, we believe have proven to be an effective means of restricting the availability of alcoholic beverages to those under the age of 21. This is my second round on the ABC board, and in the late 1990s, when the compliance checks started, there was a much higher failure rate than there is today. In 2009, there were 787 licensees successfully passed the compliance check. It was 87% of the checks done during last year.
We believe that continued compliance checks and regular enforcement will keep us moving towards our eventual goal of a 95% compliance. Compliance checks are part of a larger statewide effort to prevent underage drinking. The state plan to reduce and prevent underage drinking is a joint effort by state 12 statewide agencies and associations. In fact, the state plan recommends that compliance checks be increased rather than eliminated. Underage drinking is a problem in all states. Though the numbers in Alaska are turning in a very encouraging direction, and the Alaska Youth Risk Behavior Survey shows that in 1995, 47.5% of the teens who completed the survey had consumed alcohol in the last 30 days, and in 2009 that had dropped to 33%. I'd also like to point out that that Alaska leads the nation with the lowest percentage of youth who purchase their own alcohol. We don't believe the compliance checks are the single reason for any of this, but this is these changes in teen behaviors are the result of many groups working together. Compliance checks have resulted in alcoholic beverage licensees regularly checking IDs and not selling to underage Alaskans. And we encourage you to not eliminate ABC Board compliance checks. Thank you.
Representative Bush, you had a question?
I did. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is on a slightly different part of this legislation. There is a portion that removes the executive director's ability to vote. As a member of that board, I'd like to hear your opinion of that removal.
I don't have a problem with that. I think that the board, there may be situations where we have to delay a decision on something because we have a tie, but I think we can work around that. It doesn't happen very often.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks again. Larry Hackenmiller, are you with us, Larry?
Yes, I am.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Larry Hackenmiller, and I'm the general manager of the Interior Cabaret Hotel Restaurant Retailers Association. I don't know the success rate of the sting operations and what impact or what decreases have been taking place with direct numbers. However, one of the most famous impacts is the civil fine that we give minors when they enter premises. I think that has had the greatest impact on minor consumption when it comes to licensed premises, licensed businesses, be it package stores or on-premise locations. The Senate version of eliminating the two sections there, one section was put in there a while back uniquely because when they did sting operations with minors and the location kept the identification card, they'd also sue the minor that was involved with the compliance check. So one section took away the ability of the licensee to sue the minor if they were there on a compliance check. Kind of a double jeopardy thing, I guess. But anyway, now that they've been in place and they've increased membership awareness of checking ID cards and so on, I really don't understand sometimes the need for it, because if this was a specific problem with licensees, then your local law enforcement agencies would have some records to indicate that. Normally when you do compliance checks, or we call them stings, that's when you identify a target or a problem area, and if it would be the licensees here, the police would have a lot of reports of this. And in Fairbanks, I can't speak for the rest of the state, we don't have any incidents of minors being arrested on premises. It seems like the only time that there is an incident where it involves a violation is when there's a compliance check, and the odds, I think they're down to 10% now. So if you go to a place 10 times and you get caught once, you know, that's what the odds are according to what's been happening over the years here. That's my understanding anyway. That'd be, you know, the odds of that would be like having a legislative committee having a meeting scheduled at 3 o'clock. The odds are 1 in 10 that it actually happened at 3 o'clock. So It's pretty much the same thing as far as the impact goes. I can tell you that the licensees are well aware of it now. The inclusion of or deletion of the compliance check. This industry basically is not against anything that has to do with keeping underage people from drinking. But again, if we thought there was a great problem in it, our local law enforcement would be on top of it. Thank you.
Thanks again. Representative Wilson.
I think we just want to make sure that you stated something correctly. Were you saying as a minor I could go someplace 10 times and only one time get caught?
Well, I understood that with the latest report on the compliance checks for the state of Alaska, it indicated they're down to a 10% failure rate, which means if you go to a place 10 times, you know, you're going to catch them once. And I would think if it was a problem, you know, after you went to three or four times and didn't catch them, why are we going back? If you're trying to take care of the underage problem, if there's a line there where it's, are we more interested now in making criminals out of employees, or are we interested in minor consumption or underage drinking?
Thank you. Thank you for taking care of the issues in Fairbanks. I appreciate it.
Thanks again, Mr. Hackenmiller. Is there anybody else online that would care to testify? Baylen Cook. Mr. Cook, are you with us?
How about Mrs.
Cook?
Ms. Lynn Cook from Cordova, and I currently am on the ABC board. This is my second term, and I represent the public. I want to say hello to all of you, and Representative Olson, excuse me. And wish you all a great day. Today I'm speaking in behalf of the ABC board, and what I'd like to testify to is that we do not take compliance checks away. I feel that they have helped a lot so that to curb the underage drinking, and I feel that if it's if it goes away, that the stats will go up again. And I, as you all know, the state of Alaska is one of the highest states for problems with substance abuse, and I feel that this would continue to help curb underage drinking.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And is there anybody else online? Seeing none, and there's nobody. Madeline, are you here to testify on the underage drinking portion?
No.
Seeing none, we'll close out public testimony, and I will withdraw my objection to adoption of the amendment or the CS. Is there any further objection?
Well, no objection. I just had one question. What was the upshot of these people who can sue some underage juvenile stinger? Was that resolved?
Shirley, are you with us?
It's in the statute.
Representative Olson, I couldn't hear the question. It was faint.
Representative Lynn?
Well, you made a comment about one of these underage stinger, I guess you'd call them, was sued. Was that resolved or anything? I'm getting some nods around the committee table here. So somebody who does that now, it doesn't have any civil liability or anything. Is that correct?
The chair, Representative Lynn, I'm not sure exactly what that suit was that Mr. Hackenmiller was talking about. I guess I was under the impression that he was talking about when youth purchase, then they are fined the $1,000, and I understand, I know that there's a bill in the legislature this session to increase that to $1,500, and I believe that was the lawsuit he's talking about in terms of underage persons being fined.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to be sure that these people are protected. We need to have, we think, be excluded from civil liability for assisting peace officers.
Mr. Chairman, weigh in on that?
Yeah, Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My reading, I've pulled the statute book, and my reading is that the two subsections that were deleted in the other version of the bill are exactly those sections that protect the underage people who are taking part in the sting. And so that if we keep the CS, if we adopt the CS in front of us, they continue to be protected.
Excellent. Thank you.
Any further questions? Yeah, there's no further opposition to adopting the CS?
Nope.
So before us, we have the CS. Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion, if we could, for House CS for CS for Senate Bill 234, Labor and Commerce, version / P, Peter, to move from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Any opposition? Seeing none, it is adopted, and the bill will move on to the floor. Thanks again, everybody, and see you soon, Shirley. We'll take a brief at ease.
Representative Olson, look forward to it.
On the calendar is Senate Bill 243, Geothermal Resource Royalty Permit Fee. And with us, we have Mike DBA Fish Pulowski, staff to Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mike Pulowski, and I'm the aide to Senator McGuire. Senate Bill 243 really opens the door for the commercial development of geothermal energy in Alaska and puts that development under a regulatory regime that exists in really every other state that has an oil and gas producing that is an oil and gas producing region. Under current law, geothermal resources would pay a 10% to 15% royalty rate. When we originally approached the idea of what was an appropriate rate for geothermal, the sponsor started off with the idea that the rate should probably be zero, since it's hot water, isn't exported, and any royalty is really just passed along to the consumers in the form of higher electric rates. However, after really working closely with the Department of Natural Resources and talking through the issues, we agreed that the leasing of land for a geothermal resource actually is the conveyance of what is the equivalent of a property right, so that some form of royalty made some sense. So in the bill before you, starting on page 1, line 12, and going to page 2 through line 8, is the proposed royalty rate for geothermal in Alaska under this bill on state land. And that would be a royalty of 1.75% on the gross value of production during the first 10 years, and then 3.5% following those 10 years. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this royalty rate is the exact same rate as on federal land. And the goal was to make a reasonable low royalty rate that actually comports with what the federal land is, so that there's no real competition. And that Alaska is then attractive. A 10 to 15% royalty rate was honestly written 20, 30 years ago when they were picking a number out of thin air, not knowing what really makes geothermal economic. The other sections of the bill divide the authority between the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission and the Department of Natural Resources to regulate geothermal resources. The broad description of those divisions is found on page 2, lines 9 through 15 in section 3 of the bill. And what you see there is on page 2, line 10, the commission, that being the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, shall have jurisdiction over geothermal wells to prevent the waste and to protect the correlative rights and ensure public safety. This is the regulation of the drilling, the exploration, and the actual use of the resource. The Department of Natural Resources, on the other hand, will now have control over the leasing, the unitization, all of the land things that DNR typically does in relationship to oil and gas. So the geothermal system will be very similar to what we do for oil and gas. This change will save the state money, since DNR doesn't have the expertise in-house to actually carry out our outdated regulatory regime. But I think more importantly, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, is looking at the map on the wall behind you that shows the different parts of state land and land ownership. Under current law, DNR has authority over state land, but there might be geothermal development, and in fact there is geothermal development that isn't on state land. And it's only the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission that can regulate to protect the public safety on land outside of state land. And so that change within this bill is a critical piece to ensuring the safe development of what really under this bill is an exciting prospect of a renewable energy that actually pays a royalty to the Treasury. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. So this regulates on private property as well?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, the regulation is would, on private land would be the same as any regulation related to the commercial development of geothermal. So on private land, if you were drilling for oil on private land, AOGCC would still oversee the safe development, the conservation of the resource, because what you're actually accessing is the subsurface. The place that it wouldn't apply is in the applicability of the royalty sections. In that the state didn't own the subsurface, there would be no royalty to the state from that geothermal. Say it was Native Corp land where they own the subsurface, that royalty would then be for the person that owned the subsurface rights. But the AOGC's ability to go in and make sure it's done safely and that the resource isn't overused is put in AOGCC's hands, even on private land.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Book?
No.
You just answered my question. Thank you.
Any further questions for Mike?
Mr. Chairman, if I might put one thing on the record, I think it's important a change was made in the House Resources Committee that I think set an important policy provision into the bill, and that's on page 7, section 17. And this was defining commercial use. This is page 7, line 16. Meaning that when you're talking about geothermal power in Alaska, you're talking about geothermal power in the relationship that you're using the geothermal energy to sell heat or power to a third party. This doesn't affect the personal ground source heat pumps that people might use for their homes or for small-scale geothermal that's just for your own use as an individual.
Representative Holmes, followed by Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, I don't have a whole lot of questions at this point, largely because the bill sponsor's representative spent time in my office walking me through it. And in response to the change that was made, I thought a lot about it, and kind of where my head is at this point is let's not create any problems where they don't exist at this point. To the extent somewhere down the line we come up with an actual problem that resources are actually being depleted by individuals using it for their own purposes, we can kind of cross that bridge when we come to it. At this point, I think it's a reasonable step at this point. No, it was more of a statement. But unless Mike wants to jump in.
As far as commercial use, if I have a business and I have it on my property, like maybe Chena Hot Springs Resort, mm-hmm. Would they not be a commercial use because he's using it for his own purpose, although it may be a commercial use?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, you are exactly correct. Since he's using it for his own use and not selling the heater power to someone else, it's not a commercial use of geothermal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair. Fish, if you were to, drive an old vehicle up north or something for me, would this bill affect it?
Representative Newman, through the chair, I do not believe it would.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Fish. You're going to stick around, aren't you? Let's see who we have in the room. Nobody. Don't want to testify, Bob?
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
I had so much fun the other day.
See nobody in the room. We do have three people online. Kathy Forster, AOGCC. Good afternoon, Kathy. Are you with us?
Yes, sir, I am.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You've got our undivided attention, as usual.
My name is Kathy Forster. I'm the engineering commissioner with the AOGCC. I strongly support this bill. It will just transfer some authorities from the DNR to the AOGCC that are more appropriately handled by the AOGCC, and I think the DNR is in support of this transfer as well. And I wanted to thank Senator McGuire's office for recognizing this need, and I won't waste any more of your time.
Well, thank you, Kathy. Any questions for Ms. Forrester? Thanks again, Kathy.
Thank you.
Paul Thompson is down for question only. Paul is with Ormat, the company that's planning on developing geothermal, one of the companies. Paul, are you with us?
I am. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the record. My name is Paul Thompson. I'm the Director for Policy and Business Development with Ormat Technologies. Ormat was very honored to win the leases and Mount Spur and is very excited to develop a large-scale commercial geothermal power plant near Anchorage. And this bill really moves us forward in developing that project and reducing these royalties to the federal level. Really gets us on par with competing with resources in the lower 48, and also paving the way to develop additional geothermal resources in Alaska. So Ormat Technologies is in strong support of this bill. And I would just comment to the previous discussion on the commercial applications that this bill reduces an existing royalty rate of 10% down to the federal level. So those folks that were discussed would be paying a 10% royalty today if they were defined as commercial, which they are not. So I think you can take comfort in the fact that with Senator McGuire's amendment and so forth, they will be taken care of. With that, I will keep my comments brief and be happy to answer any questions the committee might have. And I just want to thank the committee for hearing this bill so quickly, and of course, thank the sponsor for bringing this bill forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions for Mr. Thompson? Thanks again, Paul. Kevin Banks, Division of Oil and Gas. Are you with us, Kevin?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Are you questions or testimony or both?
A little bit of both. Mr. Chairman, I'm Kevin Banks, the Director of the Division of Oil and Gas. By way of background, DNR has been saddled with the responsibilities of managing geothermal land, and what this bill does, as you've heard, is surgically carve out of our regulation or our statutes the responsibilities that are more appropriately managed by AOGCC because of the expertise that they can bring to bear. It does not add to any more regulation than already exists. It provides for safety and the correlative rights and conservation of the resource, which they are very well equipped to do, and it creates a relationship with the AOGCC and the DNR, which is similar to what we share in oil and gas. And for maybe the first time this session, I can say we support this bill and are very glad that it's come this far and that the sponsor, Senator McGuire, has done such a great job with it.
Okay. We take a question, Kevin, Representative?
Yes, I'd be happy to, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kevin, Representative Newman, I'm glad you support this bill because now I can put some amendments on it.
Maybe I should have kept my mouth shut, Representative Newman, the chair.
Any further questions for Mr. Banks? Thanks again, Kevin. Is there anybody else online that would care to testify? Seeing none, we'll close out public testimony and bring it back to the committee for discussion. Representative T. Wilson.
Would you like to move the bill? I don't know. Maybe Representative Newman has another question first.
Good bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I'd like to move House CS for CS for Senate Bill Number 243/C with, as well, there was no amendments, with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Seeing no opposition, we'll move the bill out of committee and adjourn at 4:20, just in time for the floor session.